Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, the big issue is energy. It's really hot in California. Heat wave up and down the state. It was the end of the legislative session, and one of the big issues there was energy. How do we keep the lights on? Debate about nuclear power. Diablo Canyon, the life of that nuclear power plant, the last in California, extended until at least 2030. So our guest is the Secretary of Energy for the United States, Jennifer Granholm. And a little bit later, we'll be joined by Jeremy White of Politico and Alexei Kossoff of CalMatters, two of the smartest reporters in the state. But let's begin with Secretary Granholm. And I joined her for a couple days this week. We started out in the Inland Empire and checked out some very cool advances in the world of green technology.
Flip it in there. There we go.
U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm plugs into charge an all-electric big rig. Congressman Pete Aguilar of Redlands takes this Volvo vehicle for a spin.
What did it feel like to drive?
It was great. It was great to drive. Quiet, easy.
This is a powerful machine.
Congresswoman Norma Torres of Pomona also puts the pedal to the metal at Tech Equipment in Fontana.
The Inland Empire is ground zero.
This truck produces zero emissions. It can drive 120 to 250 miles in a day and takes about 70 minutes to charge.
This is the battery that we're looking at.
Tracy Chaik is Tech's regional sales director. She says this is a game changer.
In the United States, it's the first of its kind.
She hands me the keys, and I'll admit, I was nervous, but somehow I didn't crash.
It feels surprisingly like driving a regular car. It's pretty quiet in here. It's a pretty smooth ride.
Sales are soaring. More than 360 already sold at this lot. They cost over $400,000 each, about three times the cost of a diesel version.
That's why you really could use some help from the federal government, state government, etc.
Absolutely. We definitely, our customers need help to reduce the costs.
President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act invests $369 billion in climate change provisions, the largest investment in U.S. history. California's legislature just passed a record $54 billion in climate spending.
California is in the lead, can show the rest of the nation how it is done, but clearly you are facing it as well.
California also recently announced a ban on all gas-powered car sales by 2035. But during this week's record heat wave, the state asked electric car users to not charge during peak usage hours.
Do you understand why some people are skeptical and concerned and hear that as sort of mixed messages?
I totally understand the concern. We have got to keep the lights on.
Okay, here we go.
The president's bipartisan infrastructure law allocated $7.5 billion for building electric vehicle charging stations.
The grid's going to be ready for all this?
The grid's got to be ready. We have to basically double the size of the nation's electric grid with clean energy.
Hi, how are you doing?
The secretary met some of those training to do just that at San Bernardino Valley College's Clean Vehicle Technology Certificate Program.
To reach our climate goals, we've got to have a pipeline of folks who can perform the work.
Lauro Salazar was working on diesel cars. Now he's studying to specialize in electric cars.
Electric is where everything is going. And so when I saw that, I was like, I should probably go into electric.
These kids want to feel like they're part of something bigger. And this is something bigger and how they can benefit the world. It's really very exciting.
Secretary Granholm also visited us at our studios to talk about a variety of issues, including the California legislature's decision to extend the life of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant in San Luis Obispo County. It's the last remaining nuclear power plant in California. It was set to close in 2025, but now it'll likely stay open until at least 2030.
Secretary Granholm, welcome back to The Issue Is and welcome back to California.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
The big issue in California right now is keeping the lights on. Mm. This Labor Day weekend, it is hot. The power grid is stressed. How confident are you that we don't have rolling blackouts, and what role does the federal government have in sort of helping keep the state going?
Yeah, first of all, you are fortunate that you have an incredible, what is known as the California ISO, and they are organizing the energy market for California, and they are so good. In speaking with them, they have asked for example, from the federal government waivers so that they can get any kind of energy that they need where it needs to go. So they know how to manage the flow, and so I'm really confident in the leadership of the state in making sure that, that energy is flowing. You know, but there is no doubt that everybody's using air conditioning, and so there's a real pull on the grid. So I think that they're wise. I know that they moved off of this and on this, but they're wise to ask people, I think, to conserve where they can, just to make sure that we can get through. In the meantime, though, we've got to add more clean energy to the grid. And that is a critical part of what the president has been focused on, and I know the governor is focused on.
And part of that right now is nuclear power. Yep. I know you are a supporter of the fact that Diablo Canyon's life is going to be extended to 2030.
Potentially. It's not a done deal yet. I'm grateful that the legislature made that possibility open, but they've got to apply. PG&E has to apply. It's part of a process in the federal government. But the fact that that life is potentially going to be extended is really important because, of course, nuclear is zero carbon emitting baseload power. And, you know, I'm a proponent of nuclear power. I think that the next generation nuclear power is really important as well. So let's keep what we have while we get through this period of time, because these extreme weather events are going to continue to happen, meaning extended droughts, mm-hmm. extended heat waves. And so we've got to keep clean power on, even as we build out the renewable power that we also want to see.
So why not expand nuclear? Because basically, this is the, because in this state, though, there are no plans to expand nuclear anywhere. Diablo Canyon is still a plan about when do you shut it down, not open a new one.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. And every state is different, right? So you have to respect what is acceptable for that state. But a lot of states are expanding nuclear. A lot of states are looking at these next generation advanced modular reactors, which are smaller, and all sorts of countries are looking at this as well as we face globally the potentially, especially in Europe, the close off of natural gas from Russia, et cetera. There's no doubt that next generation nuclear is very exciting and very safe. And the designs that have been approved by our Nuclear Regulatory Commission are very much getting uptake in other countries and in the United States and other parts of the United States.
So it sounds like your advice to California might be take another look at this
issue. They might want to take a look at it. I mean, if I were here, I would. I understand people are concerned about nuclear waste. Totally understand about that. And so we are at the Department of Energy asking for states who are interested to have a conversation about being a place for a safe repository of nuclear waste, so that states who have nuclear facilities don't have to be the repository for that. And California has unique issues because of its earthquake proneness. I understand that. But the next generation of modular small reactors would be, are much safer in that regard. Not that the current, not that Diablo Canyon or anything is unsafe. They are safe. They're safe reactors. They've run for decades. But I understand the concern, and we want to respect local decision making.
And of course, it makes sense that technology that's new might be a little better than technology that's 40 years old.
Of course.
What about hydrogen powered?
Yes.
Like that as a concept?
Yeah, of course. And in fact, the bipartisan infrastructure law funded at least four to eight, maybe even more hydrogen hubs. And so communities are vying, states are vying to be designated as a hydrogen hub. When I say hydrogen, I'm talking about clean hydrogen. And that means hydrogen usually that is powered by renewable energy. Hydrogen is a super exciting next generation technology that could be that baseload dispatchable power. And zero carbon emitting, of course, is the goal. So it's hydrogen is definitely on the radar.
So California made national headlines by becoming the first state to say by 2035 we're not going to have any gas-powered vehicles that are new that are being sold. You can still drive your old ones, but you can't sell new ones. You like this concept?
Yeah, I do. I think California really is leaning in. And of course, the federal government has a goal of, the president has announced, by 2030 that half of the vehicles in the U.S., the new ones sold, would be electric.
Do you think what California is doing could or should be a national model?
Could be. I mean, you know, I know every state is different, and you always have to respect what the states are doing. But I do think that once people, I mean, California has gotten more used to electric vehicles, and we have to bring down the price of electric vehicles so that everybody can access them. And this is why it's great that there's a $4,000 tax credit, for example, on used electric vehicles that has just been adopted through the Inflation Reduction Act. But once we bring down the price of electric vehicles, and that means the technology that goes into those vehicles, which is the battery, bringing down that price as well, I think people will really like I mean, people who have electric vehicles never want to go back. I drive a Chevy Bolt, and I would never go back to an internal combustion engine vehicle. So once they get more acceptable, I think those numbers don't sound as daunting.
You know, some people obviously are concerned about the cost. Another concern a lot of people have is the grid. We talked about this earlier this week. We had this situation this week where they say, don't charge your electric vehicles during peak hours, which is kind of scary for people that think a few years from now we're going to have all electric vehicles out there. What happens then? What do you say to people who feel like we're just not going to be ready by 2035? That's not realistic.
Well, I mean, 2035 is a long way away as well. We have to add power to the grid, clean power. We've got to add transmission lines to be able to bring that clean power to places where it's needed. All of that is happening right now. I mean, all of that, we're pushing on all of these levers simultaneously to get clean power onto the nation's electric grid. We have got to double the size of the electric grid in this country, not just for electric vehicles, but because of the growth of the country and because we want to move away from fossil fuels or to decarbonize the existing fossil fuel industry. So we've got to add to the grid, and we're doing that. It's part of the investments in the transmission that were passed by Congress in both the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the Inflation Reduction Act.
And let's talk a little bit more about the Inflation Reduction Act, because congratulations, it's the biggest investment in climate in the history of this country. When people hear budget numbers, most average people are like, what does that mean to me? Mm-hmm. So for the average person that's watching this right now, what does this mean to them? How does this impact their life? What are they getting out of this?
All right, so on a very granular level, for people who want to reduce their energy costs, this means that there will be rebates for them to install, for example, heat pumps to replace their HVAC system, which uses often a lot of natural gas and electricity, for a much more efficient pump, which is electric, and that will heat and cool one's home. Same thing, if you want to, and you know, these the rebates are all tied to income. So if you install a heat pump and you're lower income, you can get the whole thing paid for. Mm. If you're medium income, you can get $8,000 back. Mm. If you install an electric induction stove, you can get $850 or $840 back on a rebate. Plus, if you want to install solar panels on your roof, a 30% tax credit off the top. If you are low income, you can have this all done as part of our weatherization assistance program. So all of this for real people, for home energy costs, it's all bringing it down. On the big level, of course, it incentivizes utilities, businesses to install solar, to do utility scale, big solar fields, big wind farms, so that we can add that clean electricity onto the grid, which is, you know, from an individual point of view, it's also healthier. It's it's so much healthier for people to breathe.
And so for the average person that hears that says, that sounds good to me, how do they get that credit? How do they access that?
Yeah, so the rebate, this is what I would say, is if you're thinking about replacing any of your appliances right now, I would say wait for a few months, because we have to write the rules for the rebates, and that means we've got to consult with the manufacturers. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a little bit of time, but you can start thinking and planning for that. For those who are in who are lower income, so say you make $60,000 for a family of four, you can contact your weatherization, your local community action agency, to get your home weatherized right now to be able to bring those bills down. So, and this all much of it will be running through the states. So California, you know, California will be the place, the hub for making all this happen.
Very exciting. Something else that's exciting, I'm sure, for you is that gas prices have been going down for a while now.
But yes.
We know this is a global phenomenon. You can't control all of the gas yourself because there's so many other things that are going. But where do you see in terms of the forecast of gas prices going forward? Because you know here in California they're the highest, and we're such a car culture here.
Yes, yes, totally. First of all, it is a global thing. So the reason why gas prices went through the roof is because Russia invaded Ukraine, and Russia was a big exporter of oil. Oil gets refined into gasoline, and that's why the prices are up, because that supply was taken off the market. The president said, we want to fill in that hole that Russia created by invading Ukraine. We want to add more supply to the market. So he has the biggest tool at his disposal, which is the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And that's, the U.S. has barrels of oil in reserve that we are releasing now, 1 million barrels a day, to be able to stabilize supply and demand to keep these prices coming down. So that's why you've seen in the United States over a dollar. I mean, it's dropped every single day for, you know, throughout the entire summer. California still has high because your taxes are so much higher than the rest of the country, your gas tax. But hopefully we will see this stabilize. Now, the Energy Information Administration inside of the Department of Energy forecasts what the price will be. And on a national average, it's looking like it's about where it's going to stabilize right now. I will say this, though, depending on what happens globally, I mean, if China decides that because of its COVID lockdown, it opens up, and that means everybody in China starts to drive again, that means demand will go up, and that means prices will go up globally. So it just totally depends on what's happening globally. And this is, of course, why the president is so eager to provide incentives to move to electrification, so that we are not reliant upon global fossil markets for our energy use.
Right. And of course, the president suggested a suspension of the federal gas tax. Right. Do you think a suspension of the California gas tax makes sense?
It's something worth considering. Although, as we've seen, the price is coming down. I know California is used to a little bit higher gas prices than the rest of the country, but it doesn't make it any easier for people who are just trying to get to work and who are of moderate means.
We are talking with Jennifer Granholm, the Secretary of Energy. Want to talk a few moments about you. Before you were in this job, you were on TV all the time talking about the political realities. So if we could get your pundit hat for a second, where do you see the state of the midterms right now? A lot has changed in the last few months.
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching the fact that the president has been achieving all of these wins is just amazing. You know, whether it's gas prices coming down, or, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act, or the bipartisan infrastructure law. This week, you also heard another 315,000 jobs being created, more jobs created under President Biden than any president in the history of the United States at this point. So it's, you know, it's win, win, win keeps going. And there is a really big contrast that is being created, obviously. And I think with what happened at the Supreme Court with the Dobbs decision, the contrast is really clear, and I think that people are starting to feel better about the chances of the president and the president's party.
And yet there are still some Democrats that question whether he's too old, that question whether he should run again. Give us some insight into what he's really like behind the scenes. What cabinet meetings are like. What do you say to those critics?
Oh my gosh, I wish that they could see the president at meetings, at cabinet meetings, etc. I mean, he's with all the experience that he has so much depth of knowledge. And when he's so incisive, he's asking questions, he knows these leaders, you know, across the globe, he knows the issues, he knows and on top of all of that, I mean, he's just incredibly sharp. On top of that, he has this incredible heart for real people. And in cabinet meetings, he will tell us all, you guys, do not talk in jargon. Talk to people. What is this going to do for real people? What is this going to do for this community, for the jobs there, for people putting food on the table? I mean, he is the leader for our time. I hope he runs again, because he has been amazing. And I can just say he's a man with such a good heart and soul. There is no, I don't know. I mean, I really am so grateful to be as part of his cabinet.
Well, we want to play a couple quick games to get to know you a little bit better. This is called the name game. This is where we say the name of somebody and it's the first thing that comes to your mind. So I was thinking to take us inside that cabinet room. These are members of the cabinet. First thing that comes to mind when you think of them, okay? Let's start with the president himself, Joe Biden.
Good man, good heart.
The vice president, Kamala Harris.
Smart, so smart.
The secretary of treasury, Janet Yellen.
Okay, short, and smart. She's so little.
The Secretary of Defense, a little bit bigger guy,
Lloyd
him. Oster.
They sit next to one another at the cabinet meeting. He's a mountain. She's this little person, but really funny, the yeah. Secretary of Defense.
Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg.
Young, brilliant, unbelievably capable of speaking in full paragraphs without a pause. He's yeah. amazing.
The Secretary of Commerce, Gina Raimondo.
Oh, love her. Former gov. We have worked together. Sharp as a tack, knows business.
And finally, because I can't do everybody, the Secretary of Labor, Marty Walsh.
Marty, with that accent, Marty Walsh. He's the perfect guy for being head of labor because he comes from the labor movement. So no frills, no fuss, Marty Walsh.
So this next game is called Personal Issues. This is 30 seconds. First thing that comes to mind, these are your favorites. Not personal issues, we're not going to therapy. Okay. Just cultural favorites, first thing that comes to mind, okay? What's your all-time favorite book?
I just finished reading this book and it's not my all-time favorite, but the first thing that comes to mind is American Prometheus, which is about Oppenheimer.
Okay, favorite TV show?
I am rewatching the Game of Thrones so that I can watch the latest episode.
Okay. I don't know if that says something about Washington. Now I'm in Washington watching Game of Thrones. Favorite athlete?
Serena.
Ah, good choice. Favorite movie?
Favorite movie. I really, Patton, believe it or not, It's a Wonderful Life.
Nice. Favorite type of music?
I like Motown.
Oh, great choice. What is your favorite way to relax?
I like to run.
Who's your favorite Republican?
My father.
Oh, good choice. And this may be the same answer. Who's your role model?
My father passed away. He would be a role model, certainly. I the first thing that comes to mind is another role model who also passed away, but I loved Ann Richards, former governor of Texas.
Yeah, what a spitfire she was.
Yes.
And last question, we know you were born in Canada and you were the governor of Michigan, but you spent so much of your life here in California.
I did.
Grew up in both Southern California, Northern California, went to Berkeley, taught at Berkeley.
Yeah.
How has California shaped your worldview?
Well, I love the fact that California is unabashedly bold about energy policy. Obviously, that's where I'm interested in. You know, I think it's the canary in the coal mine. Although I don't want to say the rest of the country is a coal mine, but at least a leading indicator for the rest of the country. And so California's boldness has, I think, shaped our willingness in the federal government to move further and faster, because we can see the good and the bad about moving fast and learn from California.
Next time you come on, I'm going to have some Motown ready for you.
All right.
Do you have a favorite song or favorite?
Well, my Aretha, R-E-S-P-E-C-T,
okay.
You know.
There you go.
Our thanks to Secretary Granholm. Now, let's talk about the end of the legislative session. This was, by law and calendar date, they have to end before September 1st at midnight. They worked up into the very, very last second and did a little bit of extra time on a couple other bills, the Diablo Canyon nuclear power bill, which got through. And right there on the floor, covering it all, was Jeremy B. White from Politico, who writes the California Politico Playbook, which you can subscribe to for free, which is just great. I read it every day. And Alexi Kossoff of CalMatters, who previously worked with San Francisco Chronicle. He's the president of the Sacramento Press Club. He broke the Newsom French Laundry story, among others. And both these guys have a lot of experience up in Sacramento. They were the guys I was following on Twitter that night to learn what was happening. And I invited them onto the show this week to discuss. Let's start by talking about Diablo Canyon. Welcome back to you both. You both were there late into the night as this legislative session ended. The last thing that they talked about, Jeremy, was this Diablo Canyon nuclear decision. It happened after 1 a.m. There was a lot of drama. Ultimately, it was almost a unanimous decision. What was happening behind the scenes?
There was a lot of effort by the governor's office in particular to get this one across the finish line. It's something that a lot of Democratic lawmakers were not particularly happy with, particularly those allied with environmentalists or who have districts in the area. They remembered that there was an agreement to take this plant offline. But ultimately, I think the political necessity of keeping the lights on was what carried the day on this one.
And maybe they got the best lobbying help from Mother Nature. One of the hottest days of the entire year is when this was all happening. Meanwhile, Alexi, the governor pushed for aggressive climate package, and he got most of what he wanted. Let's put some of it up on the screen. $54 billion in climate spending, carbon neutrality by 2045, rules for carbon capture and storage, targets for 100% clean electricity by 2045, and no new oil and gas wells 200 feet from homes, schools, and hospital. Alexi, there was some strong lobbying against a lot of this stuff, yet the governor mostly got his way. How'd he pull it off?
I mean, a lot of these proposals have been in the works in the legislature for many years, and they just haven't been able to get across the line, the finish line, because there is that strong opposition, as you say, from business interests, from the oil industry. You know, there's a lot of concerns that have been raised about what this would mean for electricity prices for the average Californian. But with the governor and his administration really stepping in and you know, making that effort in the final days of session, sitting down with lawmakers right off the floor and talking to people, assuaging their concerns and convincing them that this was in the interest of the state, they were able to sort of push this over the line, in some cases by a single vote more than what they needed to get it out of the Assembly or the Senate.
Meanwhile, the Attorney General, Rob Bonta, was trying to lobby as well. He came back to the Assembly, but it didn't really work. There's a picture of Rob Bonta with his wife, Mia, who replaced him in the Assembly. They were on the floor this week. The AG wanted to push through a concealed carry bill, but it came up one vote short. Jeremy, what happened there?
The proponent of this bill decided that they wanted to have it take effect immediately, which raises the threshold from a simple majority vote to a two-thirds vote. And as you said, the Attorney General, who the day after the Supreme Court decision that inspired this bill was out there calling for it, see, with the governor's support, seemingly a lot of momentum for this one. Former legislator, he was on the floor where he used to serve for much of the day talking to people. In the end, they weren't able to get those 54 votes. This was a defeat that surprised some people. And I think there are also some questions about the strategic wisdom of going for that higher vote threshold to get it done immediately, which, assuming the governor signed it, would have meant it would have affected concealed carry permits being issued the next day, as opposed to not until January.
And so, real quickly, what does that mean now for gun ownership in California?
It means essentially what the Supreme Court dictated, which is that law enforcement agencies that issue these permits, they essentially have to give them to you. It used to be the case that they could make you prove some sort of need, and now it is a much more permissive structure.
All right, let's get to the bottom line stuff here, Alexi. Who is the biggest winner and biggest loser of this session, this year, in terms of California politics?
You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways of thinking about that question. I think certainly one person that you could point to as a big winner is Gavin Newsom himself. Prior to this year, he was not someone who had really intervened in the legislative session very closely. He liked to work more through the budget, through executive order, but he went big on a legislative package this year and got almost all of it through. So that certainly shows his continuing influence in the state. A big loser would probably be the vaccine working group. It was a group of legislators who introduced probably about a dozen bills related to trying to make it easier for teenagers to get vaccinated without parental permission, to require COVID-19 vaccines for school and work. Almost all of those fell by the wayside by the end of the session, just various opposition from people in all different walks of life. And in the end, they only got a few of those things through, including one bill that would allow the state to discipline doctors who spread COVID-19 misinformation.
All right, Jeremy, now to you. Biggest winner, biggest loser?
I think Alexei is absolutely right that the governor had a very good session. There was some doubt that he could come in late and get this climate package done, but he did. To throw another one in there, I think the YIMBYs, the Yes in My Backyard pro-housing folks, they had a very good year. A bill expediting development of housing on commercial land that faced some pretty tough opposition went to the governor's desk, as did a bill which this is going to sound like a minor deal, but a bill taking away parking requirements for new housing, which sounds minor, but is pretty substantial. In terms of a loser, I think the oil industry, other than one of these bills that they managed to block, they were largely defeated in terms of the lawmakers sending these bills to the governor's desk. And so I think despite California's environmental image, the oil industry still has a lot of political clout, but they were largely defeated in this end of session rush.
Well, we're all about to win because we're about to see Alexei's dance moves. Now, you know, we like to dance on this show. Jeremy really doesn't like to dance on this show. But Alexei is an actual dancer on the side. He works with the Boogie Monstars. We'll have scoops from these two when we come back. Now we're going to blatantly steal a segment idea from the old Chris Matthews show. Tell me something I don't know, which is scoops and predictions from two of the top reporters in the States. Alexei, let's start with you. Tell me something I don't know.
Well, I wanted to keep it a little fun with this one and give people a sense of, you know, what the atmosphere was like behind the scenes at the Capitol. Not everybody gets to be there and experience that. But I think one thing that nobody really knows about is at the end of session, you know, nearing 2 a.m. as people were leaving, there was a mariachi band that came out and was playing in the rotunda of the Capitol, and Senator Banueso, an outgoing lawmaker, went down there and sang with them. Actually a pretty incredible voice, did not know he could sing like that, but there's some great video out floating around out there of him singing with them. And so it was kind of a fun way for the session to end after a marathon day that went, you know, well past 1:30 a.m.
So who sang?
Senator Banueso.
Okay, and you sang too?
San Diego, yeah.
Did you join him? No?
No, I for all that I dance, I cannot sing with a lick, so did not attempt that.
Interesting. Jeremy, tell me something I don't know.
I'm going to stick with Alexei's theme and say that until you have been there in person for an end of a legislative session, it's hard to appreciate just how chaotic it can feel. When bills are short votes, you'll have lawmakers shouting each other's names on the floor, running around. There's 1,000 lobbyists outside. People start to get cranky around midnight, and sometimes bills go down because of sort of personal resentments that have been exacerbated by a lack of sleep. So it really is democracy at its most, I guess, kind of unvarnished in a lot of ways. And seeing it up close, you realize a lot of really consequential policy gets defeated or passed in this fairly fluid, chaotic situation. So it's something to observe.
And I will stick with the behind-the-scenes theme. We had a moment this week. We were out with the energy secretary. We got to ride this big rig, and I'm driving a big rig that's electric, and I am a terrible driver, and anybody that knows that, and I was terrified that I was about to run over somebody, maybe even a congressperson. So,
how do you survive in L.A. being a terrible driver?
I don't know. Chauffeured all the time. No.
Our thanks to Alexei and to Jeremy. And I know you're listening, but I encourage you to go to the YouTube version of this to check out Alexei and Jeremy's dance moves, because they really are something and you got to see it for yourself. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening to The Issue Is. A very happy Labor Day. Hope you'll follow us, like us, subscribe, all that good stuff, and love to connect with you in social media as well. Have a great week.